January 24th, 2014, and I'm here with Mr. Wallace, Mr. Eric Wallace the second, and we're gonna do a house music oral history. So I guess the first question is, tell me a little bit about where you grew up and your upbringing.
I grew up in the southwest burbs of Chicago, predominantly LaGrange, Illinois, and Bolingbrook, Illinois, with my mother and father for a time, and then just my mother. And it's very, I grew up, I remember being in class at a young age and going, there are 2.5 black people in this room. So I grew up with a lot of Caucasian people. So some people, like, for a long time, I kind of felt like I was, like, as my friend always uses this phrase, the black white girl. Like, I was black, and I had cousins who lived in the city, and I would pick up slang and knowledge of certain things. And just from being at home to my parents, movies that we watched, you know, traditions, etc. But then I would be at school, and so speaking, you know, proper English and listening to other types of music and being exposed to other culture, white American culture predominantly, was like how I grew up. So I kind of grew up with this like
bicultural
world.
Yeah.
And it kind of like spun a little bit more so in high school. I tried to get into like Asian culture. Like, I used to listen to lots of Japanese pop music. So I kind of tried to get into other worlds via the internet, and like that's predominantly how I got into the Vogue scene, was because of online.
So talk a little bit about sort of like early musical interests and how you kind of transitioned into like Vogue culture.
Well, my parents both love R&B and hip hop. My mom more so R&B, my dad more so hip hop. Biggie, Tupac, all that was played, Puffy, like the kind of like godfathers of hip, you know, not the godfathers, but like, because there are a lot of older people I took a hip hop studies class, but kind of like the people that made it pop, popular
right,
music.
Right, 90s.
90s hip hop was like major influence in my life. And R&B. I used to listen to so many female R&B singers. My first tape was Escape.
Okay.
So I loved Total from, you know, Missy Elliott's like R&B group. I loved, what was that song? Well, she's like, she has that real high note. You know what I'm talking about? I can't remember the name right now, but like all that kind of stuff. So like female vocals.
Oh, you mean like Minnie Riperton?
Lots of, lots of just female vocals, period. More than anything. And then hip hop. So like dancing and like beats that I can like move to. My family used to like make me and my cousin Bryce dance against each other all the time at like family functions. So like that's why I listened to a lot. And then as I got older, more like younger R&B, I got more into the R&B than the hip-hop. I liked Kanye and stuff like that, but I didn't listen to too much hip-hop. You know, my cousin Daniel was into Jay-Z hardcore, so I knew like his entire catalog, and I knew, you know, Mos Def, Outkast, because my mom liked them a lot. I liked them too, but like more so went into that female and then male vocalist. So a lot of R&B. My first CD was A. Marie,
Nice.
Ashanti, Beyonce, of course, Mother, and stuff like that. And so I was kind of like in that world, but didn't really have like a dance music like background. The one thing I was actually thinking about this before you came, because I was like, what's my history with house music? And I think the one song and the one artist that kind of like got me way back when was Crystal Waters. My mom loved that track. My family would play that a lot, and that track particularly was like my reference to house
100%
music.
Pure Love.
Yeah,
yeah,
like that was my reference to house music. My mom loved house music. You know, she knew all about it. She grew up in the she grew up on the South Side. She hung out on the West Side. She was probably at a lot of these functions. I should talk to her about it, but like, but not so much so because she's kind of shy, which is the funny thing about it. But she loved house music, and I knew that. But she didn't play a lot of house music, and so
the music at home was more
R&B, hip hop. So that one track is what I kind of knew of as far as like dance music. I didn't know anything else really. just hip hop and stuff like that. And then I started to hear some like electronic music that I liked via like anime shows. They play late night on like Nickelodeon and stuff like that. So I would read the credits, find the artist's name, then go to my computer and search them. And so I kind of got into this whole like J-pop like band wagon thing, which was a mix between dance music, pop music, and kind of like rock music. And so, and then I got into that when I was in high school. My mom thought I was like the weirdest kid ever because I was into all these random things. But on the flip side, my cousin Bryce, the one I mentioned earlier, who I used to dance with, he lived in Atlanta. And so he was very much close to, well, he lived in Athens, Georgia, but he would go to Atlanta and hang out with his friends in Atlanta. And they would go to these balls and they would go to the club and see these kids voguing. And he was like, and at a young age, he had like a fake ID at 15, 16. I didn't. I was kind of like, again, middle America, whitewash, Chicago land burbs, like listening to J-pop on my computer. Like, that was my life.
Sheltered,
like, kind of angsty teenage life. And he was like, girl, you gotta look into Vogue. Vogue is hot. Like, look up these videos. Type in Naomi Mizrahi. So I'm like, how do you even spell that? And we both talked about fashion a lot. So the fashion branding names behind their, like, house names, which was kind of what drew me to it, because we were already looking at high fashion online and talking about it and dreaming of one day having a collection together. And then he said Voguing, and I was like, what's that? And he was like, look it up. And it changed everything. It changed absolutely everything. DJ Mike Q, all the, I mean, I can't think of all the names right now, but a lot of those guys who were like making those beats for those balls in New York, and then the videos, the dancing, I like became obsessed immediately. It was something about the way that they moved to the music that struck me as like beautiful and like natural. And so I used to like watch the videos in my room and like try and recreate the dance because I wanted to be able to do it, and that was the only way I had exposure to it. So I would just watch them on repeat. Some of the chants became my favorite chants, and I would know the chants more so than the beat or the dance itself. And then I got kind of good at the dance, and would like start doing it with some high school friends like senior year, and I started going out to the 18 and over clubs once I graduated. That's kind of when I got into like more hip hop, more dance music, a lot of like voguing to hip hop, a lot of voguing to Vogue beats. It wasn't until about 2 years ago, two and a half years ago, when I started hanging out with Anthony more so, that he started playing me house music. And like, he would be playing me stuff with like South African vocalists and stuff like that. Like, he was really into it, so he knows so much more than I do. But he would play me that stuff. Jacob and Harry, JPEG and Harry, who are Men's Room, they would come in before they were as amazing as they are today, and they would play a lot of new wave house music and techno. And then the Queen Party started. And I remember on my 21st birthday, my plan was to go to the Boom Boom Room. And I got too drunk, I didn't go. And I and this is before I even met them. And I really want to go to that party because I heard how legendary it was. And I didn't make it. I was just wasted. And for some reason, I don't know, because of the location or just the friends that I hung out with, I was kind of in the, again, the boys' town world. I just felt like, again, that bicultural lifestyle. Like, I was this, living in that. And so I was kind of, like, not, you know, keen to, like, going out to places like that. But I kind of had an interest for it. Just because of my Vogue background and et cetera. And just the little tidbits that I had heard from the community. And so I just never made it. And then eventually Anthony was, you know, the unfolding of that party happened. Then, you know, they brought it back. They brought it back on Sunday, and Anthony immediately was like, no, wrong. Like, they ruined the party. And then, and they kind of did that because it was a response to Queen starting on a Sunday. And I started going to that, and I've been going almost weekly ever since. And I've, you know, gotten to know so many amazing people like Derek Carter and Michael Serafini, and then like Youngblood, like Gary David, just exposing me to house music in a whole new way. And then I realized that a lot of house music, like new wave house music that I liked, or popular house music, I had been listening to for a long time, like Hercules and Love Affair. I was a huge fan of them, because just because they played like a couple of their tracks, you know, in the retail stores that I worked at when I was in college. And then I met Shawn J. Wright. I was like, oh my God. I was like, how can I? Like, oh my God, you're real. You're a person. And yeah, so that's kind of how I got into the place where I am. And so that chanting stayed with me. We started the Band Report podcast like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. It'll be 2 years, I want to say, in May is when we started recording. And immediately, you know, chanting onto, you know, bass, like, you know, LA bass and somewhat house beats came right out. And that's kind of how I built the character of Mr. Wallace and the persona, and then now the lyricist and performance artist.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, tell me a little bit more about who Mr. Wallace is and, like, what, you know, her, like, world is about.
She is a cunt. Like, I felt like it's, I mean, like I said, I grew up in white America. So I, you know, I've seen what white America thought black gay men were supposed to be like. Mm-hmm. And I rejected that for a long time because I was just like, ew, that's gross. Or that's, they're making us seem dumb or stupid. And that bothered me. And so I tried to not be that for a long time. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, there is something to like a Banshee attitude, like, bitch, I don't give a fuck. Like, fuck you. You can't say shit to me. I'm the baddest bitch in the room. Like, right. That kind of attitude I always had. And I kind of felt like I had to have growing up because I was always told that I was doing something wrong. You're walking wrong. You're talking wrong. You're holding your hands the wrong way. Just by my family members. And then at school and stuff like that, immediately, as in elementary school, they say, oh, you're gay. And I didn't even know what that was. And I was the fuck? So I kind of built up this, like, can't nobody tell me shit attitude that always had that. And then this kind of, like, Banshee effect, aesthetic, kind of, like, helped me really come into that. And so when I started, I used to hang out at the Banshee Report party before it was even a podcast. And I knew Anthony from being my bartender and making me the best drinks I've ever had in my life. And then Drew playing some of the sickest music I'd ever heard. And I would just be talking and saying all kind of shit, you know, at the bar and to Drew and just to all the other patrons, like, and everybody knew that Wallace was that girl. And then he had a Vogue track. I would get up and spin and Vogue and dip right in this little bitty ass bar. And they're like, you're crazy. So when they said, you know, we want you to be our manager, we want to start writing, you know, music and put together an EP or a mixtape, but first, you know, we want to try a podcast as well, and we want you to host. It was just like, oh, of course, yes, I'll just be myself. And it was a self that I was becoming at the same time. So where I say Mr. Wallace is the character is more so me finally being in touch with who I am and letting myself explore some of my femininity and empowerment or self-empowerment, self-awareness that I kind of like pushed away before because I thought, you know, wear bow ties and be dressed up and be smart and be, you know, the best of you can be, like, show white America you're better than them and better than what they tried to make you out to be was kind of like the route that I was going on. And my mother, she worked very, very hard. She's, you know, she grew up in the projects and on the South Side and like in basically poverty. You know, my grandmother came up here to Chicago, her mother, when she was, I think, 17, 16. So,
do you know where she came from?
She, Georgia. So, and then my father's mother and her mother, my great grandmother, came up in the 40s from Mississippi. So, like, great migration, which I'm just now, like, reading more so about. Both sides of my family came to Chicago. And then they met and then they had me. So, like, there's a rich history of blackness and, like, finding your own way and making a better way out of, you know, the little that you've got. And so my mom, you know, she's worked very hard. You know, she's now six figure. She built this house in the burbs. She, like, drives, you know, luxury cars and stuff like that. So, like, I've seen her, like, kind of become this major person and, like, better her life and herself. And so I always wanted to do the same thing from her jumping point. Because I knew where my family came from. And so I was like, well, I want to, if I'm here, I should be able to be a CEO. I should be able to be, you know, that. But at the same time, I grew up loving Michael Jackson. I didn't mention that before when I was talking about music, but Michael Jackson was my idol. And, like, dancing like him and singing and being able to, like, affect so many people and entertain so many people was, like, what I always really wanted to do. So I had these two competing ideas of how I should live my life. And when, you know, I was living in the city and working full time and needed an outlet, and they provided me this outlet, I was like, well, I'm not going to go that way. I'm going to go this way. And so I just became, like, this character that not only is, like, proud to be who they are and will say anything that comes to their mind, probably because they're drunk, but but I also became the entertainer that I always wanted to be. And so I got to kind of like see the crowd. I'm going to wow the crowd. I'm going to shock the crowd. Now I'm going to appease the crowd. And then I'm going to disappear. And, and they're going to want more. And then I'm going to come back. And I'm going to be even better than before. And so that's what Mr. Wallace is. Mr. Wallace is a performer, an entertainer, to make people happy, but also to kind of fulfill this desire within himself to or herself to be happy.
So finding pleasure and happiness through
music
and
performance and giving that to other people. And then also inspiring other people who kind of grew up either in like these bicultural ways like I did, or who grew up in, you know, direct derivatives of like slavery and the Great Depression and now and then the Great Migration and like all these kids you see on the South Side killing each other, like to inspire them to, you know, take their attitude, take their fire, take their energy and make something positive out of it in a performance matter or in a storytelling matter, whether they're writing lyrics or books or whatever, because people want to consume that. Like people want to hear that. And I think that's what is so great about house music, is because it's those stories are there and they come from those communities, but it's also very fun. And you can dance,
it's a party,
and it's a party, and you're jumping up and down. You're having like the best time of your life, and nothing matters when you're in that moment. So that's kind of like what I want to do and keep doing for the world over.
Do you see that like there's like a like people connect Vogue the house to like their everyday lives in Black communities in Chicago?
If I lived in Black communities, I would be able to tell you that more so. Yes. I mean, when I was at the 18 and over clubs, I met a lot of Black kids from all over the city that Vogued, and that love house music. And I'm seeing it more and more, as I perform. It's actually, one of the things that I didn't like about Queen was that I was one of the few Black people that were there. There were older house heads that were like, we gotta come to this party, we gotta support, we gotta keep this music alive, we gotta show the young kids how it's done. They were there, but then it was all young white boys and young white girls and not enough Black kids. And so that was kind of weird to me. I was like, you know, even what's this about? Like, where, what happened? What changed? Like, is it now that we, you know, it's mass culture, so it's like attracting the other side, or, you know, where are the Black kids? I know they like hip hop, but like, this is major. This is our music too. And so as I perform, I've noticed more Black faces in the crowd, whether at Queen or in Bandryport, which is more hip hop rapping. I'm seeing more Black kids come out, and then as I go back to my space at Queen, at and in my house world, I bring them with me. So I do see that connection, and so it's cute. I love it when I see young Black boys and young white boys and young Black girls and young white girls voguing, because they, I mean, like they want to, and like you see these like Vogue classes, like yoga Vogue, like that's dumb to me. I think that's really bad. But then you also see these kids in Russia, these like white girls in these like dance classes being taught by like some of the greatest Voguers I've ever seen from the internet, you know, taking it seriously and really trying to craft their body and the way they move in this art form that they never knew existed. And I think that's an amazing thing, because sharing that kind of culture is amazing.
Right.
And it's empowering to a lot of people.
Yeah, that's really interesting, the like how you kind of see the difference between cultural appropriation and
appropriation.
Hi. I'm being interviewed.
You're being a monk?
I'm being interviewed. I'm also being a monk.
As a monk?
As a monk.
One of the things I love about these interviews is like, you know, for example, I was interviewing Zinzi before, and it was like in her frozen yogurt shop. And so
oh, cute.
You know, like people are coming in and out, and her little son is there being like, what does, you know, unveiled mean?
That's cute. Unveiled.
Yeah. But these are like, you know, it's like people's lives, so.
Of course. I mean, as I was saying about living in two worlds, I live with two white women. Two gay white women. So it's a completely different world than I had ever experienced growing up. Similar, but different. You know what I mean? And it's all about sharing and connecting. And they love when I vote again. they come to my shows and they know about the parties. They see me get dressed up and go out.
Yeah.
They say funny things like, oh, you're being a monk, or you're doing this, or you're Lady Gaga, you know, because you're coming out in these crazy outfits. And it's weird because, like, I'll be sitting out there in, like, regular work clothes or whatever, hanging out, smoking.
Yeah.
I go take a shower, come in my room, I'll come out in, like, a bra and heels and, like, a tassel. And they're just like, what the fuck? Like, what happened in the last 20 minutes? And then I'll come back in here and change something completely different. And it's just like this back and forth. And I'm like, what do you think? And they're like, great, or that's scary, or whatever. But it's amazing. So it's a safe space. And I love them more than anything. And that's all I want. I just want people to be happy and to love and to bring people together. And I don't know anything else in the world other than music and dance that can do that. I've never seen anything bigger than it. I've never seen so many people connected by one thing other than a song. Just a single song. You know, you get an amazing artist performing their work for a crowd of people, and you can have 10,000 people completely silent or cheering and dancing and screaming along with them. And that is amazing. And a part of me is sad when I see artists like Rihanna, who can't really, like, hold a note all that well, do that and amass this great following. But on the flip side of that, it's like, well, no, she's bringing joy to these people, and that's amazing. And there's a lot of other artists behind her helping her achieve this, you know, performance. Right. And so that's amazing. And I just want to make sure that any art that I do feels authentic to me, and that doesn't seem like I'm a figurehead of other. I mean, I love collaborating with other people, but I never want to be a pop star.
That's like the tip of an iceberg.
I'm too bangy. I'm too real. I'm gonna say some very political things, and unpolitically correct things, you know, just because, to see how it affects people and to shock people, because I know what it's like to wake up and go, there are 2.5 black people in this room. That was the thing for me. You know, to be like, oh, you're different. You know, and that girl is different, and that girl is mixed. And so,
we're the only ones in this space.
And we're the only ones in this space, and we're the only ones who are going to get certain things. We're the only one who are going to be connected in that way. And that the other people in this room look at us differently, kind of as outsiders, and kind of like, oh, that's different. You may, they, as a young kid, maybe they didn't think so much of it, but as they get older, they definitely thought differently. And they would tell me, you're this, you're that. And it was funny because, you know, at one point it was like, oh, Eric's so funny because he's saying all these things we've never heard of before, slang. And then it was like, oh, no, Eric's weird. He's different. He's gay. You know, and that's not cool. And so being queer, it's like, was a challenge growing up, but it's like, I would never choose to be anything else. And fuck anybody who says you can make a choice, because you can't. And then to the people who are out there arguing that the queer movement and the black movement are so different because a gay person can just act straight, it's like, I was growing up as a kid, and I automatically identified me as, you're gay, you're queer, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So how do I just learn to act different, you know, just a way? And being a black gay man, you know, no, I can't pull my skin off. I can't, you know, dress up as a white person and go out into the world and not have people see me that way. Nor do I want to. But on the flip side, I can't not be myself. And whatever cultural effects, you know, gestures, ways of speaking, ways of thinking that entails, you know, that's going to come out in my soul, in my spirit. And I think that I can use that to affect people in a very positive way. So I'm going to continue going on that route and being that person, and that's what it's all about for me.
What has it been like performing and being part of the culture of, like, Boys Town up to, you know, Smart Bar, like, you know, because Wang's is kind of in the heart of the neighborhood, but Smart Bar is kind of, like, further out, right?
Further out. Well, the whole queer rap movement is getting a lot of steam on the internet, so, and then just, like, in our country right now, people are open to gay marriage every other day in another state.
Right.
Signs a law, or, you know, a court says this is unconstitutional. So I think the tide is changing, and that queerness is an otherness, and that we ought not to give those people the same kinds of respects or rights. So that's a good thing, because, I mean, sometimes I perform in a miniskirt, and sometimes sometimes you see me in, like, full, like, quote unquote masculine boy wear, but I'm rapping about fucking or getting fucked. And unless you're paying attention, maybe you won't see that right away. But once you do, especially in a place like the Empty Bottle, which is on the west side, mm-hmm. you know, near Humboldt Park, like you can encounter like people who don't think that that's a good thing. Granted, people know what they're coming to when they see a show, so that's right. kind of helpful.
Yeah.
But what was really interesting for me was on New Year's Day when I got to perform at a new party called Limited Edition, started by 1-2, who's also in my rap group, and Justin Swaggerilla.
Yeah.
And so their party is at Progress, which is on the Voice Challenge Strip.
Right.
Wang's is off the beaten path.
Right. It's kind of
And that's where we started the party. And that's where I was in this bar, you know, saying all kinds of crazy things like, ooh, here come the tray. Da 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 da. Ooh, I have to get fucked. Ooh, he's fine. He's grabbing on my ass. Da 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 da. And it would be like white men, you know, walking into this like nice bar where you can get great cocktails
right.
late at night in a white neighborhood
lanterns
with the lanterns and things. But it was mysterious and, you know, the owners were so cool and everybody's so cool that it was kind of like accepted easily in that space. Boys Town, even though it's very, very gay, does not have a lot of presence of people of color.
Mm-mm.
And when they do, it's been like a lot of backlash. So you've gotten all these like people uproaring in the community about black kids being on the strip and causing, you know, violence, and they're stabbing each other and they're stealing and they're doing all these things. And, you know, my friend was hanging out with a group of black kids just walking around. They were old enough to go into the club, or maybe he was at that time, but his friends weren't. And, you know, the police stopped them, searched his bag, found, you know, lotion, because he, you know, he had a bottle of lotion with him, and they found condoms in his bag. And they immediately say, oh, why do you have these two things? You know, who has these two things? Prostitutes. You're out here soliciting. And they arrested him, and they put him in jail.
Whoa.
For walking up and down Boys Town and, like, sitting on someone's stoop. And that's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I've never had that happen to me. I've had other things happen to me, but, like, when he told me that, that's really, you know, eye-opening. It's like, okay, wait, they still don't want us here. Mm-hmm. They don't want us to be ourselves here, and they're going to find any way to make us uncomfortable in these spaces. So,
right.
Like I said, to perform at Progress on New Year's Day, when I knew there were going to be a lot of people out and ready to get drunk, was scary and exciting at the same time, because I knew that I was going to be able to expose them to something they'd never seen before. I mean, the music that I listened to, house and all this new wave electronic, like bass music, is so far beyond pop. And all they listen to in these places is pop, and then like circuit versions of pop.
Yeah.
And it's very redundant, and it's what they know, it's what they love, and they don't venture outside of that.
Right.
On every bar that you go into on that strip, you hear the same things.
Mm-hmm.
So to have my friends there playing this weird music, and then to have me performing my hip hop, my queer, you know, rap, it was very fun. And I got a great response. There were a lot of camera phones out. I haven't seen any of the photos or the videos.
Uh-huh.
So I hope it was okay.
Uh-huh.
But it was an experience, and it was great. And you know, my name was on that flyer. So I know other people, when they go back and they look at that and they say, oh, that's great. You know, where else is Mr. Wallace? I do a lot of different things, from performing to hosting. And so now I'm going to be hosting at Queen. And I hope that brings some of those kids.
Oh, nice.
Into Queen, because house music is amazing, and it's got such a queer life that I think that they would get so excited about if they like got into it. And so I hope to kind of bridge those, the world of hip hop and this queer rap and this, you know, in house, you know, hip house.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a thing for a very short period of time,
right.
And one of the reasons why it stopped was because the AIDS epidemic, you know, became so prevalent in the media. That, you know, and then it became the gay disease, and it was like so a huge backlash of the gay community,
right?
And then so it seemed like the world didn't want to do anything to do with house music because
right.
of that, and so hip house died, which is kind of crazy, because it's like two beautiful art forms from two beautiful cities from two, you know, black cultures coming together to make one amazing thing. So that's
right.
why I kind of immediately was drawn to like an Azalea Banks and stuff like that. And as you'll see later this year, I'm going to be releasing music in that same vein.
Amazing.
So hopefully that'll be one of the things.
Yeah, so this can be like a bridge for like some of the young children who like haven't found house yet.
Yeah.
But
love hip hop.
Hip hop.
And Vogue.
Right.
Yeah, you know, they love the chanting, they love hip hop, they love voguing, but they don't know house as deeply as they should.
Right.
And I think that'll bring them into it. And then I'll think, you know, as far as the kids who are listening to the pop versions of the circuit songs, the gay clubs in middle America, they need to experience better dance music. Mm. And I hope that this, you know, the Vogue aesthetic, you know, you if you go into those bars, you'll see the videos of the kids in the heels doing the...
The Ukrainian boys.
Yeah, you'll see the Ukrainian boys. You'll see the boys out in L.A. giving the Vogue poses and the heels, and they think that's cool. So I hope it brings them across the line and to discover, you know, what are these kids referencing? Because this existed before that and it became popular.
Right.
And there's so much to see and hear and know and grow and kind of get into and digest. And I'm still in the process of doing that, so I just want to bring other people with me.
Yeah.
Because I think it's so much fun and...
Totally.
So much fun.
So how does, like, being in Chicago, working with the collaborators you work with, how would you describe the kind of scene here? Like, what excites you about it? What makes it difficult to do work here?
The weather makes it difficult to do work here. Because
yes.
No one wants to go out when it's negative 50 degrees.
Uh-huh.
But what I love is that people are very open to collaborating.
Mm.
At first, I was kind of in my own world with just the Boundary Report.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had my two guys, 1-2 and Ace Boom Bap, Anthony and Drew, and it was me, and that was fine for a while, but sometimes I can't make my full voice heard in that setting, and also, there are so many other things that I want to do that are just not appropriate in that setting, you know, more of the club kid dressing up, the androgynous looks, and with, like, RuPaul's Drag Race becoming so big, and there being so many drag queens in this city, like, there are a lot of great painters and performers out there that I would like to collaborate with to see, you know, what it would be like to put Mr. Wallace in that aesthetic. And so I've kind of ventured out into other artists, Mr. Junior, who is a burlesque dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And he dressed me for a hosting event I did at Queen. And we've talked about working together, Darling Shear, who has a, you know, classic background in ballet and other forms of dance, and is working with a dance company downtown.
Wow,
and
yeah.
doing her own, like, drag performance, you know, in, you know, the scene at Salonathon and other places like that. I'm working with her more so now and collaborating with her potentially this year, and it's exciting to see so many different queer people making art in general. And then to see them making art in the form of dance and music is so exciting. So it's really great, and it's a very supportive one thing. I always say I would be so much happier if I was untalented. if I wasn't pretty, if I was untalented, and people didn't want to see me, and they didn't want to hear me or see what I was going to do next, and they just told me, hey, you know, why don't you just stop? Or, they didn't pay me so much attention and promote my shit so much, I would just, like, go and be happy and work a 9-to-5. But that's just not going to happen, because people have decided that I have some sort of quality that they like to see and that they want to get me out there. And so I've just, that's the other part of it. It's just, like, in Chicago, working with so many different individuals from so many different communities, from the house world, hip-hop world, just dance in general, different generations. You've got older people like Tim M., from Deep Dick Collective, and, you know, I've got Derek Carter and Michael Serafini, all the way down to, like, Gary David, who's young, and JPEG, you know, working at Gramophone and DJing at these, like, really cool parties like Men's Room and Pure Moods, which is tonight. That is really exciting, because I get the best of both worlds, and both of those camps are, like, Mr. Wallace, you've got it, and no matter what you do, you're going to be great. And then I say, well, I want to learn more, and I want to experience more, and I want to start to, like, mix vinyl records. And so Jacob's going to show me that, and Garrett is going to have me over sometime soon, and I'm going to, you know, rap and sing over some of his production.
Nice.
And that's really exciting, really, really exciting, because both of those people are, like, really making a name for themselves in their own right, and they're putting out work. I mean, Garrett's been, you know, to France, and he's been on Wax. Like, I want to be on Wax this year, and that's my ticket. One of my tickets. I've got a couple of things in the works.
Yeah.
I'm excited to share.
Yeah.
But, no, like, it's really exciting. The GTW is sending me music now. He's a Nigerian guy, So he does a lot of Afrobeat, like hip hop, and like he also does some very kind of like down tempo stuff, and he's really amazing. But he sent me some kind of like very housey, very light, very hot tracks that I'm gonna be rapping over, and I'm super stoked about those.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, and then I was going back and forth to like I said with the bilateral culture and like sharing with different people. GCW is from Nigeria. Mm. Gary David is like the cutest little white boy, straight white boy from. I don't know where he's
Columbus.
From. Columbus. Yeah. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm like, that's who I'm partnering in this city because
right.
so many people came here, you know, and tried to make a name for themselves. And then the schools and the art and the culture that has been, you know, sheltered here,
mm-hmm.
thanks to people like you, you know, draws other young kids from Columbus to come here for school and to stay here and to make music. And so I get to work with some of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're young people. And I just know some of these people are going to be major big when they keep going.
They're just at the beginning.
And they're just at the beginning. And I'm just at the beginning. So it's perfect. we can go together. Or I can do whatever it is that I want to do and be satisfied with the art that I put out. And that's the main goal, like I said, to bring joy and to create a place for people who are like me and people who are unlike me to kind of experience something new and come together and share. So it's exciting. Like, I think the collaborative effort in Chicago is amazing. I would have never imagined just a year ago or 2 years ago that I would have so many talented friends doing so many different talented things and that are like opening their doors and like their work and letting me like do my thing in their space and work with them. So I'm very, very, I'm not very religious, but I feel blessed. So that's a great thing.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's great to hear you talk about like sort of mentorship and support from an older generation, but also this cohort of younger cats who are seeing it not
Do
as
you know
as...
Miss Thing?
Mm-mm.
Hey, honey, Miss Thing. She talks like that.
Uh-huh.
She's amazing. She used to be at Queen all the time. They don't come as much anymore, but if you actually go back and listen to the Band Report first edition mixtape,
she's on there.
She's reading this boy in front of mine at the beginning of it, and she's like, honey, I'm too shady to die. And like, she's amazing, but she like has a cute like Vogue, and like she dances, and she's such a spirit. You can tell that he really came from that house world, like Chicago, and I think maybe Detroit. I know some people from Detroit too.
There's like a nice report.
And so I Vogue. Whenever I hear the beat, I cannot help but Vogue. And so I was like, just starting off with Banji and just like going to Queen with Anthony every Sunday and Voguing my life out. And he would just, at first I thought that these like older heads, like they didn't like my Vogue. I was like, they don't like my Vogue. They think I'm sloppy. They don't think I'm too dramatic. I'm too young. Because at first they paid me a little dust. And then they started to give me more shine. And one of the things that Miss Thing does is she takes a flashlight, and the hottest girl at the moment gets the light on her face. So like, you put the light on your face, and you either gotta give face or you gotta Vogue or you gotta do whatever it is you were doing that he sees. You gotta shine. So he put that light on me a couple times, and I was just like, oh my God, I'm in. And I just let them have it, and I had such a blast, and I came to know them so well. And he actually said to me, he said, honey, he's like, you got it. He's like, you get it, and you've got it, and we support you to take it wherever it is that you want to take it. We need people like you to keep what we had alive. And I will never forget him saying that. And that like really touched me, because at first, like I said, I felt like I wasn't good enough and that I didn't have it, or I was kind of on the outside. It was kind of like that, like I said, being in kind of a white America, you know, growing up, I didn't necessarily feel like black enough. When I was with my cousins in the city, you know, they would make fun of me. Oh, you sit up too straight and you speak too proper. But then when I would go back and I would like kind of slouch and say these slang words, the kids were like, oh, that's cool. But then when I got too different, that was too much. And so I've always kind of been like, where am I supposed to be?
Yeah.
Where is my identity appropriate? Right. And I never, like, I didn't necessarily feel at home, but they made me feel at home. Like the house kids, the old house heads, and they were like, no, you're right. You're right where you need to be. You're doing exactly what you need to be doing. You're upholding the art forms in the most amazing way. We see it for you. Keep going.
That's
and when Miss Thing said it to me, I knew I had it, so I just had to keep on going. Yeah, I was like, so like, it's definitely, I got the blessing from the old heads, and they're still supporting me, but now I'm working with the new young guys, mm-hmm. trying to make something new and right. exciting. It's a new Crystal Waters.
the next Crystal. Yeah. That's amazing. Is there anything, I mean, so we're at 40 now, which is short, but also you, like, you're the arc of, you know, you have so much more to go before,
yeah,
you know, this
really
isn't
get
you,
into
this
it.
Isn't you talking in your 40s about what you were doing at like 15, so it's a
yeah,
different thing.
It's a different thing.
But let me know if there's anything else that you think, like stories, like, you know, like people like Miss Thing, like
mm-hmm.
other people that affirmed you, or spaces that are really
Lewis,
like,
I can't remember his last name right now. Lewis, he you're gonna get so much better information from Anthony when you speak with him, but because these are all people he introduced me to,
mm-hmm.
but Lewis does a party. Cannot think of the name of the fucking party, but it's in a really amazing party. And
is it
a house party? And they also incorporate some Afrobeat.
Mm.
Like they had it one time at this place on like Damon or Milwaukee,
mm-hmm.
and they had like a house DJ,
mm-hmm.
and then they had a guy on like one of the African drums,
yeah.
Dumbe drums, like. Beating with it, and that was crazy. I'd never seen anything like
uh-huh.
that, and really made you want to move.
Yeah.
So he was one of the people that also like told me that, you know, you've got the look, you've got the style, you've got the attitude.
Uh-huh.
Like, just make sure you know what you're doing and
mm.
know who you're doing it with,
right,
because
the history.
There's a history here that you're gonna want to make sure you reference and you honor in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because he's a little bit more like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love him for that. Derek Carter.
Mm.
He, you know, legend.
Mm.
And he was just on, saw on Facebook today, some list said, you know, the most, you know, important house DJ of our time right now.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I used to work at Montclair, and I was wintertime last year wearing my Montclair jacket at the club, and
uh-huh.
and I saw him a couple times. He's always dressed really nice, but I
yeah.
didn't really know who he was. I was like hanging out in the booth, and he
uh-huh.
was like coming up and playing, and I was like, okay, cool, this guy's cool.
Uh-huh.
He's funny, he's different, but we didn't ever really talk.
Yeah.
And then like one like after hours at Queen, he was just like, I see you when you're Montclair. It's like, I love Montclair. I was in the store in London. I'm coming to see you. And so he actually came to my store and shopped with me.
Amazing.
That was amazing. And it was even more amazing because he came in. Someone asked him for help. He was like, no, I'm looking for Eric. And they were immediately like, oh, whatever. And like walked away. And then I like came out of the back. And I was like, oh my God, Eric. Da-da-da-da. I was like, welcome to the store. What are you looking for? He's like, I want this one. I think this one. I was like, okay, I'm going to pull those in your size. And so I like run downstairs, and I'm like running up stairs, and like I'm like, I have all these jackets, and like I'm not really paying attention to my boss or anything like that. And I'm like helping him. And then we pick the ones he wants, and we have these like little cards that we have people write their first, last name on, their address, all their information on like this notebook. And we bring it back, and we put all that information in the system. And so I'm back there putting all his information in the system. My boss comes up, and he like looks at the card. He's like, I want to see. And he was like, Derek Carter. He's like, he's a DJ, right? I was like, yeah. He's like a big house DJ. And he was like, I know him. One of my favorite CDs is by him.
Uh-huh.
And da 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 da. He just went on and on and on, because my boss
was
like, you know, 38, very much like that. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, girl, I know her from the club. And so he came out and was like, oh, Derek, nice to meet you. And so that was kind of crazy to me, because it was like, just somebody I met at the club who just happened to be DJing that night.
Yeah.
Happens to be this legend. And, you know, he loves me and he wants to shop with me and support me
right.
you know, in multiple ways,
right.
whether it is in the club or at my job. I thought
right.
that was amazing for him. But then, like, to see the effect that it had on, like, other people who
right.
kind of, like, knew Star-star. About the world but didn't necessarily, wasn't in it the way that I'm in it. And that was also one of the things that kind of, like, made everything twist for me. It was, like, you know, because I was doing music at the time as well, and I was like, oh, all of my friends are famous. Like, all of my friends are, like, the ones who made it.
Right.
That, like, you know, Sean J. Wright, Derek Carter, like.
Right.
You know, and then they're both black men, which is also a beautiful thing to see, that, you know, you could make it in this world being the way that you are. it was just kind of cool to see, like, oh, I'm on the right track. If I'm going to keep going, like, if I'm going to make, especially a hip house beat, and I rap over it and I put something on like that, that's someone who would probably play it. And that would get so many people, you know, exposed to me.
Right.
So that was like, whoa. I was like, this is more than what I thought it was.
Mm. Yeah.
That was a fun feeling. But I never try to take it for granted.
Mm.
I always try to pay, like I said, homage to Derek and all the other people in the scene that I've met, and I'm just excited to see what they're gonna do next because they're still working.
Mm-hmm.
They all to me look like they're in their 30s or early 40s, but they claim to be so old. And I'm like, well, you're just now really getting going, so I got a long way to go.
Like, it's a long game.
It's a long, long game, and I want it for the long game. I want to be in it for a long time and have my effect on the culture be, you know, just as pivotal as Robert's.
You know,
you know, to meet the man who had the club that this whole genre is named
rooted
after
in, right? Yeah,
and was born in, like, that's phenomenal, and that's what Mr. Wallace is going to do. She's going to keep it alive for the next generation, and she's going to make it. I also kind of want to make it well known. I don't want to be a pop star, but I definitely want a lot of eyes on me to see what I'm doing, and because I think a lot of people put things out in the world and they don't do it the right way. And like I said, when Lewis told me that, that really stuck with me. And I want to make sure that people know what's right. I mean, this is where I'm probably going to end it, but fuck Madonna. Like, fuck her for stealing basically my culture and making millions off of it and not giving back in the right way. Like, oh, you have some kids that you bought from Africa and now you're saying this nigga on Instagram. Like, no, not cute.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and like you robbed a huge part of my culture. The name Vogue, and like when you say, oh, voguing, so many people first think that, and that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm changing that.
Yeah.
That's
maybe we'll end there. Like, that's it. Like,
I'm changing that.
Rewriting this history.
Rewriting.
I love it.
Exactly.
I love it. That's beautiful. Thank you.